Weakening your grasp on all you hold dear until there's nothing to warm you. And all this familiar is gone. Pray for me and for yourself that it doesn't happen to you. Treat me as though you might walk in my shoes.
God bless you, man.
God bless you.
I'll give you a hug.
And that one I wrote in 1978.
Nonhuman Radio is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the local seasonal and organic delights at Farm Star Pizza, where the farmer is the star. Farm Star features artisan pizzas, salads, appetizers, and desserts with vegan, magic word, vegan, and gluten-free offerings, craft beer, and eclectic wines. Farm Star Pizza is open Monday through Friday for lunch, noon on Saturday and Sunday, and for dinner 7 nights a week with live music on Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday. They're located at 2359 The Esplanade. Visit farmstarpizza.com or like them on Facebook. And we're also made possible by Advantage Insurance Services. Local independent insurance broker Dave Dalton can provide for all your insurance needs. Advantage Insurance is proud to support KZFR and can be reached at 342-0540. For a quote or for more information, visit them online at AdvantageInsuranceChico.com. This is KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Up next, Nonhuman Radio. Welcome to Nonhuman Radio, where we talk animal rights and veganism every Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. here on KZFR 90.1 FM. We're streaming online at kzfr.org. You can also find us on Facebook at Nonhuman Radio. I'm Jeannie Trezino.
And I'm Danny Toms. Today we're going to talk about coyotes being spared from death in Southern California, an ag gag law overturned in Utah, and we'll talk about a New York Times opinion piece on so-called wildlife management and how it relates to the Yellowstone grizzly bears. Ginny, what's up?
The LA Weekly reported at the beginning of July that the animal rights group People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, that's PETA, has settled a lawsuit with the city of Arcadia, which is in Southern California near Pasadena, over a plan the city of Arcadia had approved to trap and kill coyotes in the area. As part of the settlement, the city will explore non-lethal methods of dealing with the coyotes and will pay $15,000 in legal fees to PETA. PETA's lawsuit argued that the city failed to review how removal of the coyotes will affect the environment, which is required by the California Environmental Quality Act, or CEQA. The Arcadia City Council had approved the coyote trap and kill program by a unanimous vote in February of this year and allotted up to $20,000 for a program to trap the coyotes using snares. So a snare is a noose made of wire or strong string that traps an animal around the neck or the body. It's not a killing trap, so it's a trapping trap. Arcadia had enacted a similar trapping program in 2010 and again in 2011, and those programs killed 20 coyotes, according to a city report. City officials said that they approved the most recent plan after receiving complaints from residents about an increase in coyotes and coyote attacks.
I don't suppose anyone considered don't live in coyote territory.
Yeah, or accept that you live in coyote territory. Arcadia Assistant City Manager Jason Kruckerberg said the main purpose of the settlement with PETA was to avoid costly and time-consuming litigation.
No.
He says the city has shelved the trap and kill program and has replaced it with a coyote management plan that includes public education and tips for residents to ward off coyotes, such as installing motion lights. Officials said that they were receiving about 3 to 5 complaints each month, though PETA claimed that documents it obtained suggest city officials exaggerated the number of complaints, which I can understand. Right. I can totally see that happening. Camilla Fox, who's the executive director of the nonprofit advocacy group Project Coyote, says the most effective way to minimize negative encounters with coyotes is to take precautions, such as walking dogs on a leash, keeping cats inside, especially at night. It's actually a good idea to keep cats inside all the time if you can. Clearing the ground of fruits, cleaning outdoor barbecue grills, and removing compost heaps. During the dry season, it's also a good idea to drain koi ponds and protect irrigation lines. That just shows how resourceful coyotes are. They manage very well in a suburban or even urban environment, and they're going to find resources if they're available. Camilla Fox went on to say, part of our message is that coyotes are here to stay. Actually, coyotes were there first. It's not that they're here to stay. And we know from peer-reviewed science that trapping and removal does not work. It creates a territorial void that will soon be filled by coyotes immigrating from outside or from higher rates of annual pup survival. So, yeah, just remember that point about coyotes immigrating from outside, because it will play a role in the grizzly bear discussion that we have shortly.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've mentioned that point in a lot of the different wildlife management articles that have come up, or they've been mentioned by the articles, and that you know nature abhors a vacuum, and there's pressure on these animals, and there's places to live, and they will reproduce to fill that spot. They're not going to just go away, and it's cruel and insane to just say, well, every 6 months we're going to kill everything. It's kind of like if you've got rats or ants, you need to remove your food sources.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that the same logic that's being applied to this coyote management process is the same argument that ranchers use to kill coyotes, right? Like, we have to get rid of them. They're either scaring us if you're a suburban homeowner, or they're eating our profits if you're a rancher.
And it's always the same lack of precise statistics, right? It's always like, yeah, we think we saw something, so we're going to go kill every coyote wolf for 100 miles.
So, yeah. And it's sad, too, that the when you do tally complaints against coyotes, the highest frequency of what they call negative encounters with coyotes comes during the pupping, when there are pups, because that's when the moms are most in need of food. They're going to be out hunting or looking for food more often, and they're going to be bringing their puppies with them. Or shortly after, if the pups have weaned, then they're young adults trying to figure out how to survive. And then they're going to be more obvious. Right. They're going to take bigger risks than a smarter, older animal.
And, I don't know enough about Arcadia or different Southern California towns, but I know my sister lives down there. I've had other friends down there who I've visited, and they're like, well, behind our house is this fenced-off greenway, because that's where the coyotes go up and down. And behind the other house, there's a canyon. That's where coyotes live. Everybody knows it. You know it when you move in. You know to bring your pets in. They recited some of the same, options up there about motion lights and whatnot. So it seems like various cities do know this and manage these coyote interactions, whereas Arcadia was just like, meh.
So, we've done it before. We'll do it again.
Right?
It's probably, you have to look at how city politics works. And sometimes the administrators, the managers of the various divisions of a city, say public works or public health or whatever, those are the guys who've been there for a long time. Even if the city council may cycle in and out, or the mayor may cycle in and out.
Right.
It's these old guys, old staff members who are set in their ways. So what do we have next?
Well, earlier this month, the New York Times reported that a federal judge ruled that Utah's ban on secretly filming farm and slaughterhouse operations was unconstitutional, striking down what is known as an ag gag law that Utah had enacted in 2012. Ag gag laws are laws that target undercover investigations at agricultural operations. The ban violates First Amendment free speech protections, U.S. District Judge Robert Shelby said. Shelby rejected the state's defense of the law, saying Utah had failed to show that the ban functioned as intended, which was supposedly to ensure the safety of animals and farm workers from disease or injury. So, to get that, to restate that, the animal abusing industry said having people film what they do was unsafe to the animals and farm workers and could cause them disease and injury, not the actual disease and injury that's going on every day. In his ruling, Judge Shelby noted that one of the bill's sponsors is the state, in the state legislature, Representative John Mathis, said the ban was a response to, quote, a trend nationally of some propaganda groups with a stated objective of undoing animal agriculture in the United States. The judge also noted that another sponsor, Senator David Hinkins, said that the law targeted, quote, vegetarian people that are trying to kill the animal industry. Shout out to all my vegetarian people out there.
and for the industries we're trying to kill.
Yeah. A farmer who supported the ban had said that he and his colleagues, quote, don't want some jackwagon coming in here taking a picture of them, according to the court citation of state records.
Yeah, we have no right.
Right. So, you know, the farmer who supported the ban doesn't want pictures being taken of his activities. The state says the ban is all about protecting animals and farm workers, so they can't, you know, quite get their story straight. The challenge to the Utah ban was filed by the Animal Legal Defense Fund, and again, as we've noted, it's in animal rights and animal activism. Legal methods take a while, but they pay off, and it's always good to continue to support these groups. The challenge was filed by the Animal Legal Defense Fund, PETA, and Amy Meyer, who is the director of the Utah Animal Rights Coalition. Meyer was arrested in 2013 while she filmed workers using heavy machinery to move a sick cow at a slaughterhouse in Draper City, Utah. At the time, Meyer was on public property, aiming her camera onto private property. She is one of the few people in the country to ever be charged under one of the ag gag laws. Though the charges against her were later dismissed, Meyer and the other animal advocacy organizations pursued this case to overturn the ag gag law on the basis that it limits the First Amendment right to free speech and thus is unconstitutional. So, on public property filming something, was charged, intimidated, probably booked, then let go, which is the purpose of these laws and a lot of the other sorts of suppression activities that are going on is just to scare people off.
Exactly. It's significant that very few people have actually been arrested or charged under these laws. But, man, they serve as a chilling effect because nobody wants to be some people do want to be arrested, but most people do not want to be arrested. They just want to have their First Amendment rights to be able to...
On public property, you can say most anything and film most anyone, including police officers. After the court ruling struck down the Utah law, Amy Meyer was quoted as saying, I was shocked when I was the one charged with a crime instead of the animal abusers. It should never be a crime to tell the story of an animal who is being abused or killed, even if it's for food.
Or maybe especially if it's for food, right?
And even taking out the animal rights aspect, you know, this is... the person reporting the crime should never be charged or redirected. You see that a lot with sort of other types of abuse cases. So after acknowledging the importance of the agricultural industry in the U.S. and the government's longtime interest, as we talk about, in supporting the ag industry, Judge Shelby wrote in his opinion, quote, Utah undoubtedly has an interest in addressing perceived threats to the state agricultural industry, and as history shows, it has a variety of constitutionally permissible tools at its disposal to do so. Suppressing broad swaths of protected speech without justification, however, is not one of them. So, I tend to like judges, no matter what side of the law they're on.
Yeah, because they're well-trained, they need to back up their statements. And in this case, I think it's pretty spot on, right?
And they know all the other laws, you know?
Yeah, that too.
They knew if this was a real issue, they could deal with it, and it's not. It's just intimidation. This is the second time a federal court has overturned a ban on filming at farms. In 2015, a district court judge ruled that Idaho's ag gag law was also unconstitutional, violating the First Amendment and the Equal Protection Clause. The Idaho case, Animal Legal Defense Fund v. Wasden, is currently pending in the Ninth Circuit as Idaho filed an appeal.
So we'll hear more on that when it comes out. I just think that it's pretty significant that these flimsy laws are being overturned on constitutional bases.
Yeah, I mean, this is just industry hiring lobbyists to buy congressmen to put forth illegal and unconstitutional laws. And
rather than cleaning up their behavior.
Right. I don't want to be so cynical that, you know, all Congress people are corrupt, but certainly many are, and they just, you know, that's why we got to put our own uncorruptible ones in charge to just do what we like.
Well, thanks, Danny. You're listening to Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio. And we have one more story. Go ahead, Danny.
All right, I'm back. You get to listen to my dulcet tones for a while longer. Last week, on July 14th, the New York Times ran a great opinion piece by author and Guggenheim fellow Thomas McNamee? What do you say, Jeannie?
I would say Thomas McNamee.
McNamee. Jeannie's the official pronouncer.
At the spelling bee.
Right.
I'd like that used in a sentence, please.
All right, start again. New York Times ran a great opinion piece by Guggenheim fellow Thomas McNamee about the Yellowstone grizzly bear. The headline read, "The government is now the Yellowstone grizzly's biggest threat." It probably has been for a while. See the buffalo. In March 2016, the United States Fish and Wildlife Service proposed removing the grizzly bear population in Yellowstone Park from the list of threatened species. Conservationists, scientists, 125 native tribes, and some 650,000 citizens expressed concern about the move. The federal government went ahead and delisted the Yellowstone grizzly anyway. The question is why? Because foremost, the National Park Service biologists and administrators believe that the population has recovered to self-sustainability. It has, in fact, grown a lot since 1984, when mother bear numbers were in the low 30s.
Yeah, they use mother bears as like the part of the population to count, because that's mm-hmm. they produce the cubs.
Yeah. So. The Department of the Interior now claims an estimated 700 grizzlies inhabiting the greater Yellowstone ecosystem, which is a vast wildland centered on the world's first national park, but also including nearby Grand Teton National Park, portions of six national forests, three national wildlife refuges, and other federal, state, private, and native Indian lands.
Yeah, so there's private lands. It's basically a mosaic, and so it's very difficult to get everybody on board. So.
I mean, 700 is not a large number by any means. I mean, give me a break. How many were there pre-colonialization, you know? I'm sure it would be tens of thousands. A true recovery would be, of course, the greatest triumph yet for the Endangered Species Act of 1973, which itself is politically endangered. The states surrounding Yellowstone National Park, Idaho, Montana, Wyoming, have been pressing for delisting for years so that they can assume management of the bears outside of the boundaries of Yellowstone and Grand Teton Parks. All three states plan to issue hunting licenses, which would be few in number, but a major victory in the culture wars of the Mountain West. And I wonder what lobbyists and donors and important political partners would get these hunting licenses, right? We've all seen the pictures of Trump's kids and dead animals on social media.
Yeah, some of those are paid for, but yeah, it's it will be interesting. Hopefully we won't have to have another story on how the hunting licenses are allotted for the grizzly bear.
I'm bad at math, but when you're like, oh, there's 700, so we can probably kill 200, and then, I mean, it's not good. This is not the first time the feds have tried to delist the Yellowstone grizzly. They did it in 2007, and they were met with a deluge of legal fire from conservation groups, which won in court and again on appeal. The court restored the bear to full protection in 2009, which was a stinging rebuke to the agency's, quote, scientific claims. In fact, nearly all conservation biologists outside of government say that an absolute recovery will never be possible for the Yellowstone grizzly population.
And that's a point I do want to get into afterwards, because my interest in this piece is just that wildlife on this continent, in this world, only survives at our human grace.
Right.
All wildlife is managed.
Right.
Either by, you know, our own systems of land use regulation or fines or actively funding restoration and conservation efforts.
Yeah.
Carry on.
So why do conservation biologists outside of government say that recovery isn't really possible? Because the Yellowstone grizzly's food system is collapsing. Surprisingly, one of the bear's most important sources of food are seeds of the whitebark pine, which is under attack on two fronts. And you'll hear,
I was like so stunned to learn that pine nuts basically are a big part of their important part of their diet.
You know, it's, they're not running around eating people or chasing down deer. They historically ate a lot of nuts, which makes sense if you think about it. The native, why are the nuts themselves under attack, is the native mountain pine beetle, which historically has been kept in check by deep periodic freezes, but there haven't been any of those for years now, and this beetle has been killing various pine tree species throughout the Rocky Mountains. There's a lot of other beetle, bug, sort of insects that are running wild, killing forests because of climate change. The other attacker is the white pine blister rust, a non-native deadly fungus that attacks the stems of the trees. More than 80% of the whitebark pines are now dead or dying in the greater Yellowstone region. So that's not a great food source. Until recent years, another food source for the grizzly was the early summer run of spawning cutthroat trout up the tributaries of Yellowstone Lake. Since the illegal introduction in the 1980s of non-native lake trout, which feed on juvenile cutthroat trout, the spawning runs of cutthroat trout are down by 90%.
Right, and why are those non-native lake trout there?
You've seen this introduction of game fish into the wrong environments all over the place all the time by, you know, a very small percent of fishermen, people who love to fish and think they know what's good, and then, you know, these guys literally destroy whole ecosystems. Guys and gals, I'm sure everyone does it. Little known but surprising and significant food source, another food source, is the Army Cutworth moth, which hatches out in great numbers at high altitudes in the, how do you pronounce this, Jamie?
Absarica
Mountains. One bear can eat up to 40,000 moths, 20,000 calories worth, in one day. So this is also a good survival tip if you're in these mountains.
I love natural history. Right. I love learning this stuff.
I'm learning it as we go. However, the moths need moist microhabitats, which are disappearing as summers continue to warm. So, you know, is it ever going to be safe to start hunting these things as, you know, as the climate degrades? And if you started killing a certain amount every year and the climate continues, how quickly would those laws be changed to account for that? Not very quickly. So, and finally, a less well-understood threat is that Yellowstone grizzlies live on what is effectively, you know, an island, sort of an ecological island, with no nearby grizzly population. Island populations are subject to inbreeding and hence lowered reproduction rates. When island populations start to fail, there are no adjacent populations to resupply them.
Right, so grizzlies are fundamentally different from coyotes.
Right, they're in that area. They can't move around. Nobody's going to come in. Be like kind of, you know, going to Hawaii and killing all of one thing. It's gone. Additionally, many of the 1,000 public comments on delisting focused on the public's disgust with hunting. Very few people can stomach the image of a grizzly bear being shot down. So management by the states is supposed to be rigorously overseen by federal authorities, and overhunting would seem to be unlikely under the proposed guidelines. Yet, pursued even by a small number of hunters, greater Yellowstone grizzlies would become much less visible for the millions of visitors who only want to see one and not shoot one.
Right, so therefore the pleasure of the few, we disrupt it, just in human context, right?
Right.
We disrupt the pleasure of the millions.
Yeah. And in fact, that would probably then decrease tourism dollars and decrease efforts to preserve the area, and it would also have a cascading effect.
Yeah, sounds kind of like the Republicans' attempts to repeal and replace Obamacare.
Right.
But yes, carry on.
It hasn't happened yet. They're still working on it.
Yeah.
Keep resisting. McNamee concludes by writing that the only way Yellowstone's grizzly bears can be expected to survive and thrive in the long term is for their ecosystem to be connected by a corridor of occupied habitat to other grizzly populations, the ones centered in Glacier National Park to the north and others up the Rocky Mountain chain to Alaska. That's still possible, though it seems pretty hard, but only if grizzly hunting remains forbidden and the connecting lands are safeguarded in perpetuity against incursion and development, which is not being done today. So he's kind of giving the academic argument, if you made sort of green corridors all the way from Yellowstone up to Alaska, you'll survive. But I mean, I have some bridges I would sell you too. So that's just not going to happen, unfortunately, at least this day and age. Hence, they remain an island population. Classification of the Yellowstone grizzly as a threatened species is formally set to expire at the end of July unless the courts step in again, taking away federal protection now with the bear's food sources plunging and their isolated ecosystem is an act of either deceit or folly. However, if this is up to the Trump administration, I think deceit and folly is their byline. So,
Anyway, I just thought that was an interesting piece from a guy who's not even an animal rights activist. He just is looking at this in terms of conservation biology and how it's just not going to work. So.
And I think it shows how, you know, organizational pressures on government biologists make them come up with claims that external biologists never will, you know.
That too, right?
And that's not to say that the people are bad people or whatever, but, you know, it's also their job and how they get paid. So it's unfortunate.
So, all right. You're listening to Non-Human Radio. What do we have up next? I think we have the Chico Animal Rights Calendar of Events. Is
get ready
next?
To mark them up.
Yeah, let's do an abbreviated version. The biggest event that's coming up is this Saturday, July 22nd. It's the Chico Vegan Potluck from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Chico Library Community Room. Our theme this month is the Farmers Market. So come bring your delicious recipes and share good company and good food with your fellow animal supportive people.
I'll be making something for my own garden, so that counts.
Nice. Yeah, everybody's gardens should be going gangbusters right now. And then I just want to give the Chico foodie tip of the week, the Winchester Goose in downtown Chico. Has been doing Wednesday vegan specials, and today's special is a drunken planked mushroom. It's a wine-soaked portobello mushroom stuffed with sun-dried tomato relish, topped with toasted almonds on a bed of arugula, and accompanied by house-made hummus, garlic bread, pickled Grub Farms summer squash, and balsamic pickled beets. That just sounds delicious. So they've been doing that every Wednesday for a while now, and every now and then I'm going to give them a shout-out. And we have also Plant-Based Chico is going to be doing their potluck and talk on Thursday, July 27th at the Chico Grange Hall from 6 to 9 p.m. And that's over at 2775 Nord. That's 6 to 9 p.m. And they're going to be talking about how to follow a plant-based diet, which is a little different, a little more restrictive than just a straight-up vegan diet. That's more whole foods, plant-based, no salt, no oil, no sugar, very healthy way of eating, and very joyful. So, and there's that, and let's go ahead, and we have one more thing, and that's the Animal Rights Quote of the Week. Go ahead, Danny.
In honor of the start of the new season of Game of Thrones, I would say that the North remembers. I mean, I have a quote from Peter Dinklage, who we may know better as the clever and canny Tyrion Lannister. In case you didn't know, Peter Dinklage has been vegetarian since the age of 16 and was the 2012 spokesperson for Farm Sanctuary's Walk for Farm Animals. And I can't do it in his wonderful British accent, but he says, I like animals, all animals. I wouldn't hurt a cat or a dog or a chicken or a cow, and I wanted to ask someone else to hurt them for me.
True words never spoken.
Non-Human Radio is made possible through the generous contributions of KZFR listeners like you. Many thanks to Sue Hildebrand for her engineering assistance and immoral support. Stay tuned for Sue's show, The Real Issue, coming up next.
This has been Non-Human Radio, a production of KZFR 90.1 FM Chico. The views and opinions expressed on this broadcast are those of the hosts and do not reflect the opinions of KZFR, its board, its volunteers, or its staff. But I sure hope it reflects some of your opinions.
Our theme music is Ready to Fall by vegan activist Rockers Rise Against. If you missed any portion of the show or you want to listen again, go to the archives at kzfr.org. This is Danny Toms and Jeannie Trezino signing off. Until next week, be different. Be better, be kind.
And go vegan.
Every action is a reaction. We've got one planet and one chance.